Well, it looks like we're recording, so we probably should start the show, huh?
We should, and we're going to start with a joke, and we'll see if our listeners get
I just did.
it.
Go ahead.
Well, first of all, welcome to Mike and Scotty Live, the March edition, and
Better late than never edition.
I would hope we were just Mike and I were just talking before we started recording that this is next month will be the 12th year in a row that I have done a podcast of some sort, and I believe it's going to be 9 years for Mike. So we probably figured this out, and I hope, as I was thinking about this a little further, I was thinking that I hope our listeners kind of understand my sense of humor by now.
You'd also think we'd have gotten our point across by now.
That don't take us too seriously.
That we wouldn't need to keep doing this.
No, yeah. Well, but no, I think, we're keeping current.
Yes, it's a current events blog, absolutely.
It really is. It really is. So I went to work. It's Tuesday. I went to work yesterday morning, and my boss says, "How was your weekend?" And I said, "Oh, not very good." He said, "Really? Why?" And I said, "Well, my stomach's really bothering me." He said, "Why?" I said, "Well, I went to a cannibal convention on Saturday, and I think I ate someone that disagreed with me." And he just looked at me like, "What?" And then
Is he a little slow?
he said something that I didn't expect. He said, "Really?" And
The only response to that is deadpan, absolutely.
I said, "No, there are no cannibal conventions," and I walked past him to my desk. So I don't think he likes me now.
But there should be.
There should be, yes. I wonder if sometimes, Tina will tell me, my girlfriend, that when I make a joke, sometimes I need to tell people it's a joke.
Then it's really not a joke, is it?
Well, because my sense of humor can be so subtle sometimes that she
It's
said people
eclectic.
when people realize it's a joke, then they feel stupid. So when they she said, when they give you that kind of vacant stare, just say, "I'm joking,"
Right.
and leave it at that. So anyhow, Mike, we're battening down the hatches for our fourth nor'easter in 3 weeks, and
The weekly Nor'easter.
it's the end of March.
Yep. We
It's
had a
March
year like
20th.
this a couple of 3 years ago. This is a little different because it's happening in March. And this is probably all my fault.
Well, I'm going to blame you. I don't know where you're going with this, but I like it, and I'm going to blame you, so.
Well, I mean, I'm getting ready to break ground here. I'm trying to do a spring project outside, so I thought April I'd be safe. I'm not so sure I am.
It's funny. You're going to break ground and I'm going to break wind. All right, that was another
Was that
joke.
a joke? Okay.
Yeah, that was a joke.
Okay.
We talked about this the other day. Last year, not maybe quite as violent, because the last storm we had almost 2 feet of snow. Last year we had a pretty mild winter until March rolled around, and then we get dumped with snow.
And I don't know if it's the same way up your way, but we have lost a lot of trees and a ton of branches down here. Like
Well,
you drive around town and you just see trees down here and there, just about everywhere.
as you know, I do a lot of driving on a daily basis for my
Right.
job. And so, I go from one end of the state to the other and up into New Hampshire, and honestly, it looks like a war zone.
Right.
It is just a mess. And 3 times in the past 3 storms, we've lost electricity. We've got our fingers crossed that tomorrow won't be the case.
Well, you'd think that all of the branches that would have fallen down have pretty much fallen down.
You would think.
We're going to find out.
Yeah, we'll find out. We'll find out. But one of the things that it prevented us from doing is cutting the paper mill for your layout
Several times.
several times. And my buddy, where the laser resides, has been hit hard with no electricity. In fact, his next door neighbor, literally the house across the street, had a power surge and it caused a fire and burnt their house down.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's been tough, but so I guess we'll, since I kind of segued into that, Mike, and we've got a lot to talk about on this podcast, we'll start with an update on where the paper mill stands. So for those of you who've been living under a rock for the past several months, Mike and I have endeavored to participate in another project together, despite the fact that in the past there have been some problems that have led to Mike not speaking to me for many months at a time.
Except on the podcast, of course.
Except on the podcast, yeah, and that's their whole. There's a whole list of rules and regulations that surround when I can speak, when I can't speak. How I answer him, how I address him. I have to call him sir, king, his honor. Things like that. But so we started collaborating on a brick paper mill that Mike found some photographs of in Pennsylvania that he wants to build for his layout, and I offered to do the CAD drawings and cut it with my laser cutter out of wood.
How hard
And
could it be?
how hard could it be? Well, it's
We're determined to find out.
as the saying goes, it's been a series of unfortunate events. And in retrospect, the drawing, and I knew what to expect from our collaborative process when it came to the drawing part of it.
That actually went pretty smoothly.
It did. I knew there would be a number of revisions, and it's a ball of clay, right? You start off with a bunch of junk, and slowly but surely you carve it down until you've got what you want. And we did get to that point with this building, and that was just a question of getting enough electricity to get to the laser cutter. But
Lasers do like power, don't they?
they do, and in this, so I'll preface this part of the conversation by saying that this laser came from China. And
Doesn't everything?
yeah, but this is actually, it's a Chinese marketed laser. There are, probably, Epilogue and other, more well-known lasers from American manufacturers are probably made in China, but marketed heavily here as American products. This is a
Oh, so
Chinese product.
this is not an American market product.
It is not.
I got you.
And it works very well. However, we had a slight problem with interpretation, I guess is the best way to put it. So I work with a Mac, and I drew the program on a Mac CAD program called TurboCAD, or as Mike has come to call it, TurdCAD. So, and I like it because it's easy to use. It's a 2D drawing program, which is all I need for,
It's
whenever I do structures.
probably a simple learning curve,
Very much so
possibly free or low cost.
for a simple person, yes. So, not free, but low cost. I didn't need to spend, thousands of dollars for AutoCAD. The problem is that when you upload it to something else to send it to a PC, which is what all of the lasers run off of. Sometimes the process can cause issues. Now, in the past, I've exported it as a DWG file, and Brian Bollinger at Best Trains has been able to open it and cut it and not have a problem. Well, when I uploaded it to the PC that runs the laser that I own part of, it the first program we exported it as compressed all of the information within the file so that it was all laying on top of one another. So that wasn't going to work. So then we exported it as an IA file or an AI file.
Was the first one a DWG file?
No, the first one was, it was, I got it right here. Hold on for uno momento. I forget, and I thought I had it here, but I don't. Anyway, so when we were able to open it, it was intact. It looked good. We didn't really. Oh, it was a DXF file, was the first one. So when we cut it, I'm looking at the pieces. I'm saying, something's funny about this. And we cut the pieces that don't have the brick embossed on them. And the easy reference is that the ends of the building are 7 inches long. Except my version that got cut, they are, and I've got a ruler right here and I got the piece right here. So I'll give you the exact measurement because this will be fun. It is 7¾ inches long.
That's a big difference in HO.
It is. It's another 6 feet. So it was 46. So it added 6 feet to the end of this thing.
So something didn't convert right. We've got that.
Yeah.
So how did you fix it?
So we sat there for the longest time and trying to understand how there could be a problem and what the solution to that problem is. And my buddy Sam, who's just a smart guy, said, look, I think all you've got to do is just draw a reference into the drawing. So he said, if you draw a 10 foot by 10 foot scale block, he said, I can scale everything to that. So that's what I did. So, now, at this point, like 3 hours have gone by. And we still have to kind of tackle the brick issue. Now, originally, when we did some testing with the brick several months ago, we were working from some pictures, some JPEGs of brick walls.
Right.
And the issue was, again, scaling. So after quite a while of trying to fiddle with the scale, Sam decided he was just going to draw a brick into the CAD program. And then it became a project of copy and paste, copy and paste, copy and paste, until we had thousands and thousands of bricks in a CAD program, which
Wait, do you hear that sound? That's
that's everyone.
the sound of Jimmy Simmons chuckling.
I know it is. I know it is. So, and we know how he did it. And I mean, I wasn't the one making that call, and the end result was that it looks really good. But it took about an hour to, so you make one. And then you copy it, and then you get two, and then you copy two, and you make that, and then you copy four, and so on and so forth. But by the time you get the height you need and the width you need, it takes a little while to do. And all the while, you've got to maintain the space in between all of the bricks that you're creating. And then you've got to go back and delete all of the little markers that you butt up against to make sure that you're maintaining that
And you're
space.
basically watching him do this.
Well, he got to a point and he said, all right, your turn. So I ended up doing probably 3/4 of it. So we did some test cutting of the brick pattern, and I actually just sent a picture to Mike. I've got to do some painting and some mortaring to make sure that I've got the depth that we need, but I think we're good to go this weekend, and hopefully we'll finally have this thing cut.
Did the new wood come in?
Not yet.
Okay.
Now, with a storm coming tomorrow and into Thursday, could be a problem.
I'm just managing my expectations here.
Well, and now the other piece too is that I'm going through Methuen tomorrow. So even though I've ordered some wood, it may be in my best interest to stop in. If they haven't shipped it, either pick it up or, just pick up a new batch anyway. So I don't want to not have it because then I've wasted another weekend.
Yeah, it's another week, exactly.
So it's been a little bit of a learning process, but I think we're, just getting to be able to cut something is a step in the right direction. Now, Mike, I guess I'll ask you for everyone else to hear. Do you have the windows?
Oh yeah.
You do. It might not be a bad idea if you sent me a package of them.
That's an idea. I could probably just drop them in an envelope.
Yeah. And that way, I'm making sure that they fit.
So you don't trust dimensions.
Well, I do, but laser cutters are not, well, laser cutters that cost $100,000 are as precise can be. Laser cutters that cost $1,800 might not be so much.
Well, sure. I'm just saying. What's their names? Tichy gave us the dimension that the opening needs to be.
Correct. And if it is that dimension, it's just nice. It's the point is that when you plug in that dimension, there is a fudge factor that the laser, so it may be a little wide or it may be a little narrow, depending upon how fickle the laser is.
And obviously, it's better to be a little narrow than a little wide.
Absolutely. So if I have a window and I find out that it's cutting a little wide,
Do you think there'd be a variation between the openings? Like some will be wide and some not?
well, it's a possibility, but usually it's one or the other.
Okay.
So I know when I did Dick Elwell's paper mill, it was just slightly wide.
Was it on this machine?
No, it was not. And I mean, and not so much so that it was a problem or that
Yeah,
it was
I mean, if it's just
noticeable.
slightly wide, a little canopy glue will take care of that, right?
Exactly. But I mean, if I can jigger with it and get it to fit snug without bending the window, it just looks better.
Sure. Well,
And it,
I don't think I have your address, so why don't you just
I will.
tell me right now so everybody has it.
Yeah, I'll do that. And why don't I give you my social security number, my PIN number for my ATM card,
Well, that's a given.
and I'll give you my American Express number and the
Don't
4-digit.
forget your banking information.
Right, exactly. How about if I send it to you later?
There you go.
Okay. So that's where we are with that. Now, while I was messing around with stuff like that, Mike was playing trains again. You had another obsession.
I did, yeah. This was being thought of as the last obsession before the project, and I did, want to have at least one more. And the guys were certainly clamoring for it, so you can't disappoint the crew. So, and actually, I think it was one of the better obsessions we've ever had. Experienced guys who meshed together, and one of my regulars, Neil Schofield, couldn't make it, so we got Chris Butts off the spare board. He was next up. And Chris hadn't operated here in, boy, I want to say over 2 years, probably. He's just been busy on his end, and he's building his layout, and it just kind of worked out that way. So I think it was good for him to experience it in person, what he's been hearing about and reading about and seeing pictures and what have you, and he had a good time. So, and I think we posted a couple of pictures of that on the podcast group.
Yep, they are there.
Confalone doesn't want to be the only guy having obsessions. I can't blame
Well, you're beginning to rival his frequency.
Well, we're trying to kind of tag team it, I mean, I don't know that we want to have him do three and I do one. It kind of makes sense to get a regular rotation. And at some point, Neil will maybe start operating, and Jim Reddington might operate more often. And the goal is to have op sessions on a fairly regular basis. Obviously, not every other weekend, but say every month. Go to an op session. I think people would think that was about right. And if you have four different people instead of one or two doing that, then it's not a big burden on any one party, you know. So I think that's ultimately where we think we'll be.
Several months ago, I think I equated, when you started having them again, I think I equated them to the early Apollo missions. The goal was to kind of, test out different theories
Right.
and test out different parts of the layout and test out different operating schemes and opportunities. And you kind of, now you're kind of Apollo 11. You're going to the moon.
I'm thinking space shuttle, actually.
Space shuttle. Yeah, I mean, well,
Not the ones that blow up, but I mean,
no,
you know, the
not
good shuttles.
those.
In other
Yeah.
words, we're doing it regularly, and there's a benefit to that. I think we may have mentioned in the past the truism that when you run your layout a lot, it just runs better. I
Yeah.
can't fully explain why that is. It's not like you're going around, fixing things all the time or cleaning things all the time, but maybe it's because, it doesn't give you a time to make messes, and therefore, things stay nice. I don't know, but there's no question that the more you run your layout, the better it seems to work. And this was no exception. Everything worked, just great. And even the staging of it, I found that I used to be heavily dependent on train night conversations with my buddy Dave, and we'd two brain it and try to figure out, how to block certain things and what order of business. And I'm at the point now where I've done two of them myself now, just because of Dave being unavailable. A lot of it's weather related and what have you.
Yep.
And so I did the January one that you were at myself, and this last one, and it went just fine. Now, there was only one major dispatching error, and Dave and I found a way to make that together, so I didn't feel as bad. But a general rule of thumb is when something leaves from one staging yard, it's an excellent idea to make sure there's a track for it to arrive into at the other end.
Yeah, that can
And
happen.
had I just done two trains in a in you know swap their order, I'd have been fine and looked like a genius.
Didn't quite work out that way,
Not
actually.
really, no. I had to five finger an entire train once I got it to back to staging, which is not the biggest catastrophe in the world, but as soon as the train arrived, I just went over there and thought, oh, you dope.
Well, that's kind of surprising given the fact that, the staging yard is, one of the new things.
Well, I knew I was going into operating under this particular scenario with the least amount of staging that's practical.
Okay.
There's only four tracks on
Less.
each end, you know what I mean? So
Yeah,
if
less than
you
the least amount that's practical.
I if you run a mainline train in each direction, now you're down to three. And if you run a local on a D&H train, there's your four tracks on one end. And if you have your coal train on another, there's like one free staging track out of the eight, And that's suboptimal, I think. So I think when I do the relocation of the yard and staging into the new building, I'm going to add at least one track to each end.
Okay.
And I'm also adding a whole new staging yard for the D&H, so that'll also free up an additional track, because right now D&H and Conrail trains heading south to Allentown go to the same staging yard, which is what they did on the prototype too, but Allentown had more than four tracks.
Right. Well, so what's the worst thing that could happen? You have more tracks than you need.
It's like being too good looking or too rich, there's no such thing as too many staging tracks.
Right. And we know what that's like, by the way.
Well, that's why I use the example. Everybody can identify with that.
All right. Exactly. Exactly. So what was, besides the, the lack of staging in that scenario, what were the other takeaways?
I'm finding here, and Mike C was saying the same thing, that although the regulars often do different jobs, there's no question that certain people just gravitate to certain activities. So, for example, up at Mike's, you're going to find Joe Posick at Madrid Yard, and you're going to find Jim Reddington running New Sharon, which involves a small yard there, a major grain mill, and then going down the branch and doing some work there. So he just really likes that job. And likewise here, I can't pry Mr. Reddington out of Mahoopany. And now that Pittston Yard exists, I can't pry Joe out of Pittston Yard. He just thoroughly enjoys it. So the good thing about that, and there's nothing bad about that, because there's nobody standing there saying, "But I want to run Mahoopany." You know what I mean? It's not like that. So the people who are free runners and are running road trains and running locals, my goal is to have sufficient quantity of those and have them arranged in such a way that they're fun to do. And that we seem to know now, how to do that. So that problem is pretty much solved. For several sessions now, been able to pull that off with ease. And it's actually huge to have experienced people at Mahoopany and at Pittston, because those are complex places that if the people operating there know what they're doing, all is well. And if it becomes sort of a quagmire, it ties up the whole railroad. It's just like real life on the railroad, when they make a major change at a major yard like a Selkirk or something like that, it just screws up the whole railroad, So the experienced people doing what they want expeditiously makes for a very happy and satisfying op session, and that's basically what we've been having.
I can speak from the session that I attended, and I thought that the layout ran fantastic.
Yeah, but if you recall, Joe Posick didn't make it to that one. So Pittston Yard was sort of run by committee, and it worked, but it wasn't ideal.
Gotcha. So with that in mind, will this be the last session before construction?
If you had asked me before that op session, I
See
would
how I
have.
segued?
Yeah, no, I mean, if you had asked me before that op session, I would have said, yeah, probably. And then, we go out for a sandwich afterwards, usually, and do a kind of a post-op session analysis, in a very casual way. And people ask me the same question. And, I thought about it and I said, what would prevent me in the short term from having another op session even during construction? Really, the only difference might be that people come in from upstairs instead of from the lower driveway. Because you have to figure that the lower driveway might be kind of in chaos. But the basement, that's not the first thing that I'm going to do. When that building goes up, I'm obviously going to be busy with everything to do with that. And we'll talk about that next if you like. But beyond that, I'm not going to be taking apart the layout for quite some time, because that structure needs to get up. It needs to have its interior done. I need to relocate and set up an entire install area before I vacate that from the basement. And I need to do some work on my workshop, because there's no way you embark on a major layout building exercise without having all your ducks in a row. You know what I mean? So,
It'll take forever if you don't.
you'll waste so much time that it'd be crazy not to do that. So, and not only that, I'm you know that little you know how you enter my basement through those double doors, and you may have noticed another set of double doors just to the left of that, or not.
Yep, absolutely.
But that's the oil tank room and shipping and receiving. Well, in discussion with the oil people, it makes sense really to buy a new oil tank. Those are 30 years old, and the bottom 25% of them are no doubt full of goo, and it just doesn't make sense to move ancient oil tanks like that. So I'm gonna buy my last oil tank that I'll ever need, and
Well, okay. We're just talking about cars, folks, and so that's what that where that comment
Yeah,
came
I look
from.
at it this way. I'm 62. I've got 30 years on these oil tanks, and they're not ready to be thrown away necessarily. So I'm unlikely to need another oil tank after buying this new one, you know. Sad to say, but I think that's probably true. So then in that fashion, you buy the new oil tank, it goes into a new location, they hook that up, then they come and they pump the good oil into the new tank, and they get rid of the oil ta the old tanks, which also includes cutting them up and all of that and hazardous disposal fees and all of that jazz. So, you know, for one fee, it all just goes away, and I don't have to make this awkward transition, you know, from one location to another with an old oil tank. So all of that has to happen, and then when those tanks are out of that room, I think it's a 9 by 10 room that'll be completely empty, and I'm going to make it into the model railroading stuff pantry. All that stuff that I've got all over the basement, under the layout, you know, in poorly labeled boxes and, you know, things of similar categories not together, it is all going in there in identifiable ways so that when I want something, I'm just going to walk in there and put my hands on it, and there it will be. That alone will save me so many man hours in the course of a year. You can't even imagine what I waste right now with that. You know what I mean? So it's going to feel good to get that all set up. And I don't think we're talking about a month to do that. You know what I mean? I could probably take 2 or 3 days and have that where I want it. You know what I mean? But all of that needs to be done before I even consider the task of disconnecting Pittston Yard and staging below it and moving it. You know what I mean? So I'm thinking that it's highly likely that I might be able to squeeze one more obsession in.
So
Now,
so much for the last operating session before construction begins.
well, we were thinking of it that way, but rumors of that might have been just a little premature, or not. You know, I mean, what I'm heading into now is more the unknown, right? I really don't know at this point what I don't know. But I can tell you that I've certainly put some thought into it.
Well, and so, one of the topics that we're gonna talk about is, the house project and where that stood, and so, we're kind of leading into that with this part of the discussion. But you mentioned to me, before that you had a discussion, or there's some marker line drawn in the sand, I guess, with regards to the process, the project, the start point. So maybe you can fill us in.
Well, we have passed an important milestone here. On Monday, I got a call from my contractor who said he was on his way to the town hall to get the building permit, to physically, you know, get it and pay for it, and at that point you're officially good to go. And it's in the front window of my workshop right now. So there are no permitting obstacles at this point to beginning this project. So he came by and we spent a good hour plus out in the cold driveway, reviewing the 100 questions that he had now that he's looking at it. You know, I did have an architect do the drawings and all of that, but the architect was careful to emphasize that many of these decisions were going to be, how did he put it, field conditions, determined in the field. In other words, use this as a guideline, but basically your builder's going to have to figure it out. And that's not that unusual. My builder assured me that this was very typical of architects in his experience. So he's
That
going through it from the standpoint of the guy who's actually going to cut lumber and build this, which is a little different from how the architect approaches it.
Okay.
And you know, you need the architect's drawings to go for the building permit, of course.
Yeah.
The building inspector seems like a pretty good guy. His main concern is that you're not exceeding agreed upon boundaries and that the thing is built to code, you know, that it's safe, that it fulfills all of the rules and regulations of, you know, current construction.
Yeah.
Little deviations it's not going to bother him. Not if he's working with a reasonable contractor who is cooperating with him. And I have no doubt that my guy is going to be that way. So I'm not too concerned about that on the one hand. Now, on the other hand, I've made some significant changes already.
You're kidding.
Well, from the drawing stage, I have.
Okay.
And when I spoke to the architect about it, I told him what I wanted to change, and he said, you know, I don't think your building inspector is going to have any problem with that. If he has any issues, have him call me. He may want me to draw a final as-built or not, you know what I mean? But he didn't think it would be a major issue, so we're going to rock with that. So the main change that I've made is that I realized that after the architect drew it and I started to mark things out on the driveway, I realized, you know, this building's not going to be long enough. And I added 4 feet to it.
I've got to stop you and put my surprise look on. Okay, continue.
Okay. You know, when you start thinking about how you're going to interact with this thing that you're moving out there, that 4 feet makes an enormous amount of difference because it permits me to have my Pocono Northeast branch line and, an aisle.
Yeah.
So, so it's an important 4 feet. So looking at that, I just said, you know what? It'll cost me a couple more dollars, but why am I doing this? You know, I'm doing this to achieve a certain goal of what I want to do with the layout. And if I didn't put that 4 feet onto the end of the building, I would have regretted that forever, you know, for the rest of my life. So I wasn't going to go that route. So I added it on, and we talked about it. And, you know, it affects other things, because if you make the thing 4 feet longer, you're talking about longer, you know, roof joists, and you have to look at now how that affects the foundation plan and how it interacts with the existing building and all of that. So, you know, we took some time and walked it through, you know, and he had a lot of questions. And when he got done, he said, "Boy, you have put a lot of thought into this, haven't you?" I said, "Jimmy, I've been thinking about this for a year." You know, I mean, I'm a project manager. This is what we do. You know, you walk it through mentally. You try to look for all of the stages and dependencies and things
sure.
like that. And, you know, it's a lot easier when you're not doing it with a team of people and resources. You know, it's me and my contractor, and that's pretty much it. So that makes it a lot easier than a typical project that I would run, you know. So that's the pro. And the con is, if you forget something, there's nobody else to say, "Hey, what about this?" You know, so I really have put a lot of time into trying to think it through. And that's what resulted in the oil tank move and figuring out how the stairway is going to go to get into the upstairs where I am right now, because that stairway, the way I get up there now, is going to be gone. You know, that won't be there. So you have to really think through how you're going to use what you end up with and make sure that you're not missing an opportunity to do it right, you know. So that's basically the exercise I've been doing in this whole winter delay, you know, and I think it was time well spent, and I'm not sorry we didn't try to squeeze it in before the winter. I did think that when I was shoveling snow for the first time, you know, because this whole area I won't need to do that in anymore, you know.
Right. So it's got that added benefit.
Exactly. That was part of the whole impetus to even consider this.
Now, you know, given your, I don't want to say fussiness, right? Because that makes you sound like you're a prima donna. Your thoroughness, your attention to detail.
Okay. I like that better already.
Yep. Yeah. Or your fussiness. have you ever considered just building a full-size mock-up? You know, complete with, you know, full interior and completed layout before you begin construction?
It's really how I started, believe it or not. I took the house plans and I took some measurements off of it and tried to locate the existing workshop. which was quite the exercise because it's not at the same height and it's not at the same, you know, it's not, it's like a not even a 45 degree angle from the house. It's at this odd angle, so it just kind of complicates everything from a design standpoint. And I spent not a small amount of time with foam core and cardboard trying to conceive of how this would even be possible. I figured this would help me communicate with an architect, you know, rather than just walk in there with something scribbled on the back of a napkin. And I basically crashed and burned doing that. I just completely failed. I'd get to a certain point with it, and my head would explode. The 3D interaction nature of it all just defied my abilities to do it expeditiously. And I was talking to a builder friend of mine, and he said, "Get an architect. This is what they do." So he recommended somebody. I spoke to the guy, and the rest was history. Took longer than I wanted it to, but you know, nobody any good is just sitting there waiting for you to call to do something.
No, they're not. They're not only tied up, but they're tied up for a good long time too.
If they're any good, they're all like that. So I've spent, and that's why I was trying to push this building permit along, because there is a list of people that need to do things at certain times, like the excavator and the air conditioning guy and the oil people and all of that, you know. So I'm sort of general contracting that aspect of it. So just today I gave the excavator some advance notice of all this, and he of course assured me that he was very, very busy in April, but he would try to accommodate me.
Oh
So, you know,
man.
that's why I wanted to get in early to avoid disappointment.
So, having said that, it appears that, when the ground thaws, you're on that path.
It's not even so much the ground thawing. My contractor said basically that we he wants to get the snow off the ground. You know what I mean? There's snow everywhere. You know, you just can't do what you need to do conveniently, tromping around in piles of snow. So I get that. The snow being gone is sort of the optimal, it's okay to consider outside construction kind of clue, you know. And up until, you know, this storm, I thought, well, I guess that last one was it. So I'm hoping we'd, what we need, I don't even care if it snows tomorrow, as long as we get into something more resembling a spring-like weather pattern, which we just haven't had yet.
Well, so
We
they're
had a
calling
short
for.
period there. Right? In fact, before that last storm, I think I had mentioned to somebody that the frogs had kind of woken up and were grumping down in the pond there, you know. So I thought, yes, we're here.
Well,
And
February was a very pleasant month.
it wasn't bad at all.
And actually, I know you haven't, because we talked about it, you hadn't really seen the weather, but next week we're expecting temperatures in the 50s. So it's
Really?
maybe.
You've seen that already?
So
That's
maybe
great
we're.
news. That's what I need. Because what I was going to say was, I don't really even care by that much if it snows tomorrow, as long as we get into a warmer weather pattern where it'll just go in, melt, and that'll be that.
Well, the issue for me is that, we're getting towards that time of year, Mike.
The
And
mud season.
now baseball season.
Oh, that, yes.
And Confalone's favorite time of year, mud
Right.
season. So in Massachusetts at this time of year, it's really a hit or miss proposition. So you can either get really nice weather in early spring and the ground thaws and dries out and you can get your baseball team outside to practice, or it stays crappy through April and you don't get outside until the week before you start actual games.
My experience with March is that it's a cruel hoax.
Yeah, it is. It's March is not my favorite. So
We're basically having our February in March.
we are, and as I mentioned before, that was really the case last year. But we've got outdoor practices scheduled for the next 2 weekends, and I don't think that's going to happen, especially with another foot of snow coming tomorrow.
Hey, I've been out there almost every day taking my 2 mile health walk, toughing it out in the cold, and thinking, boy, you know, I could really use some spring right now.
And it has been cold. So, Speaking of warmer climates, or at least slightly warmer climates, you're heading south to Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I've got an interesting 48 hours coming up on Friday. I'm going to the Journal of Light Construction show in Providence with my buddy on the Cape, and something we do every year. And it's actually a great show. If you do things and build things, it's all contractors and manufacturers and remodelers and what have you. And they give you all kinds of free stuff. It's amazing. It's amazing. So we come back with we each bring a backpack with us, and we come back with each backpack filled with tubes of sealer and caulking and samples of screws and free T-shirts and samples of things for gutters. And just I could go on and on and on. If you own a house and you do things on it, it's a great show to go to. We've been going to this for, I don't know, it's got to be 6 or 7 years at this point. We never miss it. And it's so useful that even though I should be driving to Pennsylvania that day, I'm going to the show and then leaving right from there for Pennsylvania. So, I mean, I'll be leaving Providence probably at 4 o'clock or something like that. And then driving to Malvern, which is down near Philly. So, it'll be a long day.
Yes, it will.
And then the next day, it's going to be the meet all day long. And I'm doing my clinic at 8:30, which was an interesting clinic to prepare because this particular show is every other year, and I missed the last one because of I think I was in the middle of layout kaboom or something. It was just too crazy for me to try to get down there 2 years ago. So that as a result, my clinic is 4 years worth of updates. So what I did was I looked at the last clinic that I gave down there, looked at the last PowerPoint slide in it, and then tried to see what has gone on from there. And I was blown away with how much has been done in the last 4 years. Really, the majority of what the current layout looks like has been done in those 4 years. So it's a very big update that I'm doing, and it was a little bit of a challenge to make it a manageable size presentation, but I think I did so. I took a lot of I took maybe I don't know, maybe 8 slides from the 2014 presentation, which were showing at that time current status of construction, and then I showed subsequent pictures indicating what it had become. And so that should be very interesting. People kind of like the before and after nature of some of those things.
Well,
I'm kind of looking forward to giving this because it's I'm a little rusty. It'd be good to get back out in front of people, and it's always a great crowd, and they ask excellent questions, and they're very attentive, and it's just a friendly room, in general when you do these things. So I have missed it a little bit.
it's funny you say that because as you know, I mean, I did clinics by the dozens.
Right. Well, I think we both got burned out on it for a while.
Yeah, well, my situation was a little different than yours, but yes, I felt like I was doing the same thing over and over again, and even though they were still very well attended, there's a limit to my knowledge base, my
Well,
level of
and if you get
expertise.
bored with your own presentation, it's not going to be a good presentation eventually, and that's people, they kept asking me to do the weathering clinic, and after a while, it was just like, I've done this countless times. I just don't want to do it anymore.
It's
So
like
I only do it. It's like with the articles, I'm writing about what I'm interested in and excited about, and I think that's the only way I could do a decent article. If I had to just crank out stuff by rote because I had to, I think they would be lousy. And it's the same thing with the clinics. I have to be interested in it myself.
now you know how the Rolling Stones feel every time they have to sing Satisfaction.
I will never understand how they do that.
Well, so on the next podcast, we will. I mean, what I like about this podcast, Mike, is just this. We have every new podcast is a series of updates,
It's current
and
events, man.
it is. And the next podcast, we'll have hopefully I can't imagine why we wouldn't, but a finished cut kit structure to talk about. We will have an update on the house project. We'll have a report from the convention in Malvern, and you know, all of which is to look forward to, in my opinion.
And we may even have our much promised and long delayed surprise mystery guest.
Oh yeah, that's right.
It's been
that's
so
right.
long, I bet you forgot about
I
it.
Did. I did. I did. I surely did, but am looking forward to still doing it nonetheless.
Mr. Project Manager has not forgotten about that. It is a it's an unticked box.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
When the time is right, it'll be a pleasant surprise.
Well, and as usual, you've kept me on task here, so I appreciate that as well. All right, folks, we will talk to you next month.
It's going to be a short month.
Yes, it is. Take care.